My message this morning is entitled, Groans Too Deep for Words. And I'd like to share with you a true story of lament. I call it the day I could not pray. So it was graduation day. I was receiving my first college diploma. I was pretty pleased with myself. You see, neither of my parents had received a four-year degree. And my brother, as it turned out, was going to have another three more years before he had received his. So my grandmother, who was my last surviving grandparent at that point, made the long trip up from the North Carolina coast. She met my parents and my brother in Asheboro, and they all made the rest of the journey together in order to see the first Sandlin receive their diploma. Oddly enough, in the end, they did not get to see what they came for. Graduation was on a Sunday, and I was borrowing a cap and gown from a friend, and I was supposed to go into the Wesley Foundation, which was a Christian group on campus, to pick it up. Most of my friends were from the Wesley Foundation. Even the campus minister and his wife were honestly really, really close friends of mine. So, Sunday morning, I head off to the Wesley Foundation to retrieve the cap and gown in hopes of bumping into the campus minister before the Sunday school classes he taught started up. Because basically, on such a joyous day as graduation day, he would have been nothing but a toothy grin from ear to ear. It would be just wonderful to see him. So when I got to the Wesley Foundation, I was surprised to find that the doors were still locked. See, they're usually open on Sunday morning for all of those who are going to be coming to Sunday school. I'll never forget what happened next. I cut my hands around my face to try to block the morning glare from the sun, and I leaned in close to the glass doors to see if I could spot anybody inside. I suppose at this point I should say that it was not unusual for something very unusual to be going on inside the foundation on a Sunday morning. As a Sunday school teacher, he loved to surprise us with these little lessons that would happen outside in the foyer area and then carry on into the Sunday school classroom. So at first, it really wasn't too surprising when I looked in and saw something that seemed like him, possibly, reclining on the stairs in the back part of the building. The morning glare was actually exceptionally harsh that day, so I really couldn't see well enough to be quite sure what the point of what was going on was. So after a very brief second, I rapped on the glass. Nothing. No movement. No sound. Nothing. So I ran around to the back door and peering through this tall, thin glass window right next to the door, I looked down the stairwell and I saw him. There was no doubt about it. It was him. And something was wrong. So I ran to the church, was really only 10, 20 feet next door. Found the associate minister in the kitchen, told him that something was very wrong with the Christian campus minister next door at the Wesley Foundation. And without even giving him a chance to respond, I ran into the kitchen, picked up a very large and very heavy stew pot, and ran right back to the front doors of the Wesley Foundation. I stood at those doors feeling very alone, no words, no thoughts, just the glare of the glass and that cooking pot. And with one huge heave, I slung the pot at the glass and it shattered with absolutely no resistance at all. The next thing I knew, I was standing next to him. I checked for a pulse and for breathing. There was nothing. Within minutes, I was joined by the associate minister from the church and a few of the church members. I actually don't remember anything else until I'm upstairs in the upstairs apartment with the police. And I am sure that they were asking me questions about what happened, but I'm going to be honest, all I remember is being told that I would not be attending my graduation ceremony that day. Truthfully, at that point, it really didn't matter. But that's all I really remember about being with the police. The next thing I remember is them leaving. And I was alone. Finally. Emotions were just running rampant. Pain, grief, fear, disappointment, loss, anger. The world was spinning so fast, and I just needed a little bit of peace, a little moment of respite. Sitting there in a burnt orange easy chair that was now under stuff from years of use, I decided to pray. God, that's it, God. No matter how many times I tried, that was all that would come out. I had no words. I was lost. I began to cry. The only sounds in that room were the muffled sighs, cries, and groans of my grief. On that day, in the upper room of the Wesley Foundation, I understood what today's text calls sighs too deep for words. I actually think of them as groans too deep for words, which might actually be a better interpretation of the Greek here. Words were too trite, too limited to tell the tale of the struggle and the strife that was beating my insides apart. Beyond feeling physically sick, I also felt spiritually sick. I had tried to pray, and I could not pray. I didn't know whether to blame God or to run to God. The good news is, I know now that I didn't have to know whether to blame or run to God. Romans 8:26 reads, "And in the same way the Spirit also helps our weakness, for we do not know how to pray as we should, but the Spirit intercedes for us with groanings too deep for words." Groanings too deep for words. That is the real essence of a lamenting prayer. Groanings too deep for words. Our words are too trite, too limited to communicate anything about the deepest struggles of our soul. Sadly, there is something very human about holding that kind of pain away. Or worse yet, trying to talk that kind of pain away. There's something about us that leads us to try to hide the darkness. The parts of life which can be described as groanings. And that's exactly what I did. When I emerged from the lonely darkness of the upper room of the Wesley Foundation, I left the groaning in there. I showed an unaltering faith. I couldn't have people believe that I doubted. I couldn't let them know that I couldn't pray, that I had failed. I put on a brave face, permanently wiped the tears out of my eyes before I exited the door, and told the world that I was just fine. But I wasn't. This was somewhat early in my spiritual journey. And at that point in time, I just didn't want the world, my friends, to think that something had challenged my faith walk, that something had separated me from God. Somehow letting people see me cry, well, it meant that I didn't trust in God's plan or something. And worse yet, if I did cry, or even go as far as to question God, what would they think of me? What would they say? That life became too much for me, that my relationship with God was not enough to sustain me during difficult times? Well, I couldn't have people thinking that. So I put on my happy face. And all the while, my spirit groaned. I wish that someone back then would have given me our verse for today. I wish someone would have said, "The Spirit also helps in our weakness, for we do not know how to pray as we should, but the Spirit intercedes for us with groanings too deep for words." Groaning is okay. It's one of the languages of our soul, the language of our sometimes suffering souls. I don't claim to have full understanding of the Scripture. I just claim to have experienced it that day in that understuffed, burnt orange easy chair. It says that our soul's prayers sometimes consist of groans that cannot be expressed in words. That groaning can be part of the essence of a prayer. The Scripture reading today suggests that the Spirit does not pray an eloquent, poetic prayer for you when you are so numb that you can't pray. It just comes in beside you and begins groaning. And I'd suggest that what's being taught there is that we should be doing exactly the same thing for each other. Having just finished Easter season, we may recall the anguish of Jesus as he hung on a tree and threw up prayers. Father, forgive them. It is finished. My God, why have you forsaken me? But I tell you, I believe that the most profound prayers that day were never recorded. They weren't recorded because they weren't words. They were prayers flung up to high heaven in each sigh, cough, and groan that slipped past his lips. Groans that spoke of the human suffering, the brokenness of the world, and the longing for something better. Groans that found their roots in the rulers of that time, the coming death, and the powers that be, and the depths of despair. Today we can hear those same groans echoed in the cries of those who suffer in this broken, sometimes broken world. Those who have lost loved ones, those who hunger, who thirst, who are dying of disease, who are alone, homeless, lost, addicted. Our text would add to those who are weak, distressed, suffering hardships, persecuted, naked, in peril, and at war. Each one groaning. Groans that find their roots in death, life, rulers, things present, things to come, powers that be, and depths of despair. But here's the good news from our reading today. Neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor rulers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor anything else in all of creation will be able to separate us from the love of God. It's a gentle reminder that not even our pains, our hurting, our doubt, not even our groanings can separate us from the love of God. Groaning. Groaning is the essence of a lamenting soul. It's authentic. It is the piece of reality that words just cannot capture. It is the deep, heartfelt, soul-felt yearning that expresses more than words ever could. It is okay to groan. It's deeper than words will ever be. So when you doubt, when you hurt, when your soul aches, groans.